From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday, July 21st, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Braves, remember them? Well, they'll be in town for the weekend. And then the Cincinnati Reds come to town. Hey, the Air and Water Show with the Blue Angels and the Waukesha County Fair happened this weekend. And for something a little different, Saturday it's the 5th annual Freak Fest in Walker's Point. Getting your freak on should be a hoot. And finally, it's National Junk Food Day, which I celebrate every day. Let's start in Kansas. A game warden has a message for the locals. Don't go fishing with a gun. One of the irate gun-toting fishermen was quoted as saying, well, here's another usage for the Second Amendment. You can wrap your fish in it. I wouldn't want to be a game warden in Kansas. And it's been a bit since we talked about Florida, but they never fail to disappoint. A Florida Japanese steakhouse was shut down after meth was found in the soy sauce. Well, that must have been good for repeat business. People are amazing. A woman in Indiana was arrested for a DUI at 9 in the morning. She was headed for a job interview at the county sheriff's office. And no, she didn't get the job. And finally, Burger King in Thailand is causing quite a stir with its new menu item. A cheeseburger without a burger and a jaw-dropping 20 slices of American cheese. That's 20 slices of American cheese on a sandwich. If that's not enough cheese for you, you can get a side of cheese curds and never go to the bathroom again. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Tom Pappenfuss, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. A bit of a mixed week overall for markets. The NASDAQ actually down 0.6%, losing 81 points this week. The S&P adding 31, up 0.7%. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average just squeaked out a 10th straight positive day, up 3 points today to close up the week at 719 points, closing at 35,228. That's up 2.1% this week. For the year, the NASDAQ up 34.7, the S&P up 19.2, and the Dow up 7.6. You know, Steve, I think meaningful to point out that we've spent much of the year talking about growth stocks, talking about technology, talking about all the things that last year were beat up pretty hard, that this year had a really nice run through the first 6 months. And then now we go through this stretch where we got a couple of rough tech earnings notes this week. We got some reasonable data from some of the banks and some other areas of the market, and all of a sudden you're seeing the things that we're doing really well. Yeah, earnings season's a mess always, and there's lots that can happen, but you're seeing the stuff that did really well give way or cede some ground to some of the stuff that maybe had been a little more timid, a little more tepid the rest of the year. And so 10 positive straight days on the Dow, a nice run for an index that had been pretty far behind much of the rest of the market. I think maybe for me, an exciting place to be to see a little more participation than just those six or seven tech names.
Yeah, you know, Kyle, it's a wonderful reminder of the importance of balance and diversification in your portfolio. And, you know, for what we do and in our profession, I know we all start to salivate at those opportunities just when somebody wants to give up on an asset class. That's usually when you want to be a buyer. You know, over the years, we've all trained ourselves to want to get what everybody else doesn't want to have. And if as an investor, you can stay disciplined in that approach, you're never going to be chasing winners at a time when you shouldn't be buying near highs, and you're never going to be selling other asset classes at a time right before they're going to rebound.
Yeah, you use that word chase, and I think that's the key. Is there's this tendency to want to chase those returns, the stuff you've seen do well, to assume that it's going to continue to climb. And I think the reality is it becomes difficult to outperform if all you're doing is buying the stuff that has done well. Sometimes it takes that discipline to say, I want the thing that's cheap, I want the thing that's maybe a little unloved, understanding that there may be a reason why it's unloved, and that might be the reason why you don't want it. So we got to be a little careful there, but, you know, Tom, maybe encouraging that we're seeing some broadening finally.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other, you know, part of our conversations with clients right now is, you know, looking I think the conversation is, well, we've had a great first half of the year. Now what do we expect? Are we preparing for more weakness, or is there more to be had? And I think there's a couple of encouraging signs that I've come across, some of the data looking back over the last roughly 60 years or so, that when you look at the S&P and we've had better than 10% returns in the first half of the year, 80% of the time the second half there's positive returns. So I find that a bit encouraging. And on average, the second half gains have been single digits, but nonetheless positive. So I think there's that we can kind of lean on, that history tells us that it's just not usually a fad that, we're giving it back, but that usually it's a sign of more things to come. I think perhaps even potentially coming on the backs of a bear market. The recent American Association of Individual Investors survey that came out has just recently turned bullish. So whether or not you might be a contrarian or not, but there is a lot of cash on the side. There's a lot of people that went to safety. I mean, it was just a few months ago that people were asking me about treasuries and money markets and finding the best rates. That could be the start of some of this money trickling back in, and again, leading to supporting this market and perhaps, realizing those positive gains in the second half.
And it's also a reminder, Tom, that the market is a leading indicator. I've had conversations all month with clients talking about the U-turn we saw in October of last year. Keep in mind that inflation in October was still over 7%. The Fed was nowhere near being done raising rates. Yet the market since then has obviously had a fantastic run over the last 9 months. And it's just a reminder that the place we're at now, this market is looking out to where we're going to be, not in August or September, but where we might be in January or February. We're almost getting to the point where they're going to give up on 2023 and look instead to 2024. Where is the Fed going to be with rates? If they're done raising rates, all that is doing is creating a bit of a tailwind in anticipation of inflation finally being back down into the 2 to 3% range, the Fed finally being done having raised rates, and companies getting back to just making money.
And I think what I appreciate is how much of a mixed set of data is out there, that you look at institutional managers or mutual fund managers, they're sitting on piles of cash because they're reasonably concerned about what comes next. And yet when you ask them how they feel, they're mostly saying they're feeling pretty positive. And so there is a bit of a dichotomy sometimes between what we say and what we do. Sometimes there has to be, right? Because you have to prepare for even those things that maybe you're not sure are coming. The other part of this, though, is that when you look at some of the, for example, bank executives and what they're doing, they're writing down less than we thought we would have seen at this point. Their kind of expectation for what's loan loss going to look like down the road is a little bit stronger. And so when we talk to or listen to some of those bank CEOs talking, it's not a, hey, we think the world's going to get a lot worse, and so we've got to set aside this cash now for those write-downs. It's, hey, we're always going to set aside a little bit for write-downs, but maybe it's not as bad as we thought. And so bank earnings this week, I think, were one to put in the win column. And then, Joel, we got the leading economic indicator late this week that kind of pointed to maybe a few things we might want to put in the, hey, let's be a little more careful column.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kyle. But they've also been doing this for more than a year. It's been 15 months in a row that the conference board's, leading economic indicators have been signaling recession. So now they're saying we really think it's happening this time. I don't know if it's a good analogy, but you cry wolf and eventually there's going to be a wolf there, right? They're looking back at a 6-month basis, and their indicators have gone down 4.2% over the last 6 months. The 6 months before that, it was 3.6%. So it's actually getting worse. And they're now saying that they expect a recession to begin maybe as soon as the quarter we're in right now, and go through till the first quarter of 2024.
And I think, that's a reasonable place if the Fed is going to cause the recession that so many have forecast. I think it's certainly still in the cards, and yet, I think if you look at, how are people investing right now, they're a little more optimistic when you see how much things have run. When you look at forecasts for earnings, it's a bit more optimistic. And so, I think it's one more of those where you go, well, okay, how much emphasis do we want to place on the downside? What are we going to do if that's the real concern? And the good news there is there are some options. You know, I think the other piece of this is that we may actually have to be apologizing to Jay Powell here. I think, you know, Jay Powell saying at the very beginning that inflation was transitory. Well, yeah, I guess define transitory. And I think the point was we may not have to cause the recession that we normally have to cause. It may happen anyways, and it may just be our time for one, but the Fed may have been able to get inflation under control because it really was transitory, because it was impacted by all of these effects that weren't monetary or fiscal issues. They were just knock-on effects of COVID and some of the other stuff that was hanging over.
Kyle, I think it's interesting because there's a lot of analysis kind of looking at, we're not really sure, I mean, the experts aren't really sure what really caused that high inflation to begin with, all the different factors that went into it. And now they're also trying to analyze what's bringing inflation down the way it is. You know, we know historically that when the Fed lifts interest rates, as they have done in an historic way, you know, the last year or so, that recession has followed. That you know, the Fed has caused recessions by doing that. And so far, we're not feeling a recession. If the conference board is right and we're in a recession right now, this is great. Because, you know, a lot of the economic data that we're looking at would suggest that if we're in a recession, it's not that bad. You know, the unemployment rate's near a 50-year low. But the other thing about the Fed and how it acts is there's always a lag between what they do and what we feel, and they're still raising rates. And they're expected maybe to raise rates again next week. And so how long will it take before we really feel all that stuff?
So I think we can, safe to say, we can blame Russia and not Jay, maybe, is it, at the very least. But, I mean, that's the other, you know, the kind of the anomaly they talk about is just, well, we got to this point where that transitory, quote unquote, kind of effect would have started to take place. But then we had that the major issues with the Russia-Ukraine war and kind of the constriction of supply on the whole entire globe and what that did to inflation. And so kind of put a massive dent or wrinkle in that plan for the way we thought inflation may have gone in the whole place. It might have changed the course of interest rate increases all across the world.
Joel, we had some other economic news this week, housing, retail sales, both big, big forces in kind of the economic picture here. Maybe not recessionary, but showing the same things we're talking about, a little bit weaker than we've been, a little bit weaker than we'd been maybe 2 or 3 years ago, either just before the pandemic or as we kind of started to spend again right after the early days. But signs that at least for now it's strong enough.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would categorize most of the reports we got this week as downbeat, but not that bad. You know, it's as you say, it's weaker, but from a pretty strong base. We had retail sales went up again, which is a sign that consumers are spending, and that's what drives our economy. But they weren't up as much, and you know, there are 13 major categories of retail spending that we look at, and 7 of those only went up. So 6 of the, you know, half of them went down. So that wasn't a great sign. And one of those categories, bars and restaurants, basically was flat. It went up 0.1% from May to June. And that's a category that you look at because when consumers are really feeling confident and they want to spend money, that's one of the first places they go, is out to eat or out for a drink after work.
Might the bar also be the place they go when they're not feeling confident?
There's that aspect too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reality of the retail sales number is that it's, as we know, these indicators are volatile from month to month, but it is one of the most important pieces we look at to really gauge how healthy is this economy.
And if you correct for inflation, spending was actually flat from May to June. It had been up the 2 months before that, corrected for inflation, and last month it evened out. So maybe there's, I mean, you don't put too much in 1 month's report, but maybe there's a slowing trend there.
And perhaps some more household formation would help retail sales a little bit, and we got news on housing this week.
Sure, yeah. The National Association of Realtors came out with their existing home sales numbers, and one of the things that I found interesting was they're always blaming the low inventory for keeping sales down. And this month they said, for the month of June, they said that basically there's only about half of the inventory that the market demands is out there. And I saw a report in the Wall Street Journal this week that said that newly built houses are accounting for about a third of all housing sales, and it's usually like 10 to 20%. And we also had numbers from the Commerce Department saying that housing formation, the building of houses, the building permits and the housing starts are also down, and that's trending lower. And so the whole inventory thing is going to be something that puts a kibosh on, you know, much more housing growth.
I'm not sure that there's a ton new out there. It just seems like the earnings data is mostly coming in where we thought. It's always a little better because, you know, corporations say, hey, we're going to do bad, and then, well, you did slightly better than bad, and so hooray. I'm not sure the economic data is surprising all that much right now. There's just not a lot that's catching us by surprise. The one risk is when we get comfortable with that, when we all believe that, you know, the status quo is going to continue, it's the one-offs that catch you. And so I think that's the one caution we have right now. It's why, Steve, you starting the conversation talking about balance today, I think continues to be the critical point. It's easy to say, well, yeah, when the S&P starts the year up as much as it's up, generally is up later in the year too, that, yeah, the data is getting worse in some areas, staying strong in others, and that tends to signal that maybe what we're going through is, you know, a little bit of a garden variety recession if we get there, or just a garden variety slowing, but not enough to really take things down. And that's a risk to me. Maybe the biggest risk to me is that we get too complacent here.
Yeah, but is a recession a bad word? Everybody has this negative connotation, and I think a good analogy might be that our economy was clipping along like we were driving 100 in the far left lane. And Jerome Powell comes in and says, hey, just like stay on the freeway, but, you know, change lanes maybe and slow down to 75. We still want to get there in one piece. And so in this case, a recession is basically us behaving ourselves so that we don't crash and burn.
No, I think that's absolutely the right analogy to use here. And, you know, somebody else that's going pretty fast right now, the Blue Angels flying outside the window. If you've heard them as we record this podcast, they are practicing for their run this weekend. As I did last week, highly encourage you to come downtown Milwaukee here and see all that we have to offer between the Weird Fest and the air show and air and water show and all the other things that are going on in downtown Milwaukee. Encourage you to come see it. As always, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.